The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Hey, everybody. Quick note before this episode begins. My audio sounds pretty terrible, and I would like to blame it on the fact that this movie is a piece of trash, but I'm afraid I can't. I messed up with some of my settings, so please bear with us for this episode. If this is the first episode you're listening to, listen to another episode for a lot of reasons. I mean, this one is good, I think. We have fun. we talk around the movie a lot, but both for the movie and the quality of my audio, give another one a shot. Okay, on with the show.
Who are you?
I'm the ones getting you out of here.
You're looking rather buoyant this evening.
Shut up. What exactly are you looking for, Willis?
This is a murder investigation. I do believe I'm falling in love.
Get in line.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I am Tobin Addington.
And I'm Aislinn Addington. And today we are going to talk about the 1996 film Barb Wire.
Yes, we are. Why are we talking about this movie?
I'm so sorry. I do apologize. We are talking about this because the lead character is arguably a badass lady. Mm-hmm. So that fit the premise for me. And then it was co-written by a badass lady.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
and so
yep.
I thought, well, shoot, maybe they're doing something real special here that's been overlooked and we should investigate. I had not seen this movie when I suggested it. And truth be told, I think I was getting confused because I remember Pamela Anderson's TV show, VIP, that was, you know, heightened reality, like late night cop show thing.
Yes, sure.
And I think I sort of superimposed this on that and thought, yeah, that was like a legitimate thing. We should watch it. So that's why we find ourselves where we do.
I think it's a great pick, actually, because in the sort of, you know, like miasma of the mid-90s, like, people knew of this movie and knew of the trailer, and, you know, I had never seen it, but I think it thinks that it is a badass lady, you know, owning herself and her world.
Right.
Movie. And I think that in that way, like based on the movie's sort of what it thinks it's doing, I think it's a great fit for us.
Sure. I mean, it's kind of like the ways that, for example, the Bechdel test can be helpful.
Right.
And yet if that is the only rubric we're using,
right.
Things are left out or things are approved in quotes that, you know, are, you know, potentially such as this movie, that don't necessarily, you know, move the needle in terms of the equity or inclusion piece. So yeah, I agree. It still is worth talking about in that, based on what I understand our charge to be, it fits in that bucket.
Right.
So let's, yeah.
I would really love to hear from any of our listeners who watched this movie just knowing we were going to do this.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, I'm just curious. And on the other hand, I'm a little sorry.
Yeah. Oh, so sorry. So sorry. Tobin.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit more about the behind the scenes of this film. Can you give us a little bit of history?
Sure. Here are my two bits. The first is that the original director of this movie was Adam Rifkin, who is a Cage Club, I don't know, favorite, but like a known Cage Club director. He directed Never on Tuesday, an early movie of Nicolas Cage's. So I know that our brothers and sisters on the network have talked about Adam Rifkin before. He was replaced mid-production by David Hogan, who's the credited director on this movie, after the material that the dailies that Adam Rifkin was turning into the producers were deemed not good enough. So I'm so curious. I'd love to see just a little bit of what he shot to see.
It always makes me sad when somebody starts something and then is replaced and we all know about it. And hopefully everyone involved, you know, thinks it's the right choice, but like, that's gotta be a little bit rough, eh?
I would think so. In his defense, Adam Rifkin has had a better subsequent career from David Hogan. Like, this is not a bad movie to have your name not on, you know? Right. So, but that's number one. The other thing is that the co-writer that you mentioned, Eileen Chaykin, Eileen Chaykin, she went on to an impressive TV writing career, wrote for The L Word, Empire, and The Handmaid's Tale. She also wrote for Fresh Prince prior to this movie. So she's had a lot of success in TV. Aislinn, speaking of Eileen Chaykin, can you take us through all the millions of ladies who have a hand in making barbed wire?
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure there were many, many awesome ladies who had a part in this somewhere, but the two that are in front of me are co-writer Eileen Chaykin and actor Pamela Anderson, who is credited at the time as Pamela Anderson Lee.
Yes.
Which is also one of those things that happens, you know, where like you know what time period you're in by how the credits roll?
Right.
Is it a Pamela Anderson, Pamela Anderson Lee? Is it a Courtney Cox Arquette? Right. What are we doing here? Okay, Tobin, golly. What's this movie about?
Okay, so in as few words as possible, during the Second American Civil War, a bar-owning, bounty-hunting thief played by Pamela Anderson, then credited as Pamela Anderson Lee, must overcome her studied nihilism when she's drawn back into her past as a resistance fighter in order to help a defecting scientist make it to freedom in Canada. It's basically Casablanca meets Sin City meets the Road Warrior, if you want to be super generous.
Indeed. So that was my first question to you.
Yes.
At what minute, Mark, did you say, oh my God, it's Casablanca?
I had it pegged at Casablanca probably, I don't know, is it like, when do we first see the scientist? That's when I had it. And then it just kept repeating, you know, like kept compounding that. It's like they found that and then like, okay, let's just keep doing that.
Which.
What about you? When did you figure it
out? So I am not as familiar with the classics as you are. So for me, it was at minute 38. When they're in her bar and they sit around the table and have the conversation.
Yeah.
Like basically with the Nazis.
Right, right.
And then it was like, oh my God. And then I had, because I was so confused particularly in the first third of this movie, I had read the whole Wikipedia just so that I could understand what was going on. And so I knew how it ended with the getting on the plane and stuff.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So that to me, so once I saw them sitting having the conversation with the guy who looked like a Nazi, I was like, oh, and then you add that. And then I see what they're doing here. This is dystopian future pleather Casablanca.
Right. This is 2017 dystopian.
Which I also love. I love a dystopian future that is now in the past.
Yes. Yes.
So weird.
When did you realize that this movie was going to be truly terrible, perniciously bad?
I think in the opening credits,
yes,
when they were hosing her down, and I knew there was she had some sort of temper about nicknames.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a couple years ago listened to a podcast about this movie, but I didn't re-listen to it because I didn't want to be, you know, stealing jokes or anything. In fact, I have no jokes. I'm just sad. But so I knew there was something, but I didn't remember it was that she hated being called Babe, which to me is real difficult in that her name is Barb.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that people should call her what she doesn't want to be called. You and I both have things we refuse to be called.
We do.
And it's important to respect that. But what's tough is that it's so close to her name.
Yeah.
That I feel like there could be a lot of misunderstandings that could end with a stiletto to the forehead.
Yes, yes.
Because of, you know, just a small difference in sound. I don't know. It was just, oh, goodness. That was, so that's when I knew it would be terrible. And I'm not anti-nipple in any way. But I think the amount of nipple in the first 30 minutes was like, okay, this is not what I had hoped it was going to be.
Right.
But again, not as a player anti-nipple, just ratio of like nipple to good writing, maybe.
Yes, the nipple ratio was off.
The nipple ratio was off. And then it also, from the jump, did one of my least favorite things, which is action with your hair down.
I had that thought as I'm like, this is going to drive Islam crazy because she never puts her hair up to do all this. Even in the flashback when we see her in her military days.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is like, I would love to have been on set seeing that shot. Like, that is hysterical as her hair is spilling out of her, like, army helmet and on the tarmac. Oh my god.
Her very clean army helmet.
Yes.
Like her Halloween costume army.
Right.
Army helmet. I think if you are a bounty hunter, you would not want to be so conspicuous. I don't know. I have a hard time with her motivations. I also don't want to tell her what to do. You know, I appreciate that she's finding her way through this world.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, she changes clothes a lot. And again, I don't want to tell her what to wear, but it just seems like she really goes through it. It made me wonder if there was a problem. Like, and there could have been. I don't think much of what she wore could breathe. So is it true, sweats up every time and then needs to put something else on? They weren't really disguises.
No, they weren't. There was very clearly her every time.
Because they were all pretty much on brand.
Yeah.
So that it just confused me. And I wanted to find it. I wanted to say, Tobin, here's why this is subversive in a really interesting way.
Right.
And I just couldn't get there. I think, you know, moments or ideas, but just like whole project, I could not get there.
Yeah, you could see, if I squint, I can see of the version of this movie that is campy, fun, subversive, that it takes the doesn't take itself any more seriously, but maybe it takes the style a little more seriously, or this just, I don't think is it. In fact, I think this is a pretty, as I said, sort of pernicious, mean-spirited movie.
Mm-hmm.
The moment when I realized this is going to be like, and this is a movie that's kind of disgusting to me, was in the opening crawl of the credits telling the backstory as Second American Revolution and like against the congressional fascists, basically, as though Congress could get shit together and become a fascist. Like it's this very, it ends up being this very kind of libertarian right wing fantasy of there's this last free city in the country. And everything else is sort of run by American Nazis, but those American Nazis are of a congressional delegation, is what they're called, I guess. And what's crazy is, and not, I don't want to go too deep in the politics of this, but like, first of all, it's kind of gross. And second of all, when it gets to the, like, then in this free city, there are customs agents that like attack everybody. She has a prostitution license. Like it's not anti-sex worker here. I'm just saying if this is a truly free place, would they have a Like, it seems to be a lot of bureaucracy for a free, for a quote unquote free place. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Well, and I don't need to, like, certainly I didn't entirely understand all that. Yeah. Cause like you say, it's meant to be the place that is not under martial law. And right. yet they're raiding the club and there's right. the Nazis are in the club. And
right.
I just, I didn't enjoy this.
No.
At all.
No, no.
I enjoy her hair.
Yeah, tell me about that. What do you enjoy about your hair?
Well, one, she changes clothes and she likes really, I don't know. The timeline was just baffling because after the first encounter where, yeah, you know, she's hosed down and then is really there to save a kidnapping victim. But then you see she's got a towel around, you know, she's like, I'm going to dry my hair. And then every other time there was a hair change, you didn't see it like that. But what I was nostalgic for when I saw it was, it was a very, to me, like signature Pamela Anderson, where it looks dirty. It it looks like it wants to start to be dreadlocks, but isn't. Mm-hmm. It's like super, super tousled.
Yes. Yes. Right.
That is just very much her. And so there is something I think nostalgic and like, of that era, that was a, you know, she was a look in that era.
For sure.
And I think a look that other people, you know, modeled after, what have you. I mean, it was the 90s. And Baywatch and all that. So.
Sure.
I don't know. I didn't know I had missed it until I saw it again, I suppose. And she is gorgeous. That's not what this is about, but she is. But I did kind of hate all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a nostalgia to her silhouette. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it, honestly, like just literally the silhouette that is, you know, that's if you were alive at that time, you know who that is.
Yes.
And you know, the movie does take advantage of that in some ways, in, you know, and maybe smartly. You know who I don't know that I liked him in this movie, but I kind of appreciated the register he was performing in.
The guy who played her brother?
Oh, I did like, I'm curious. I do want to talk to you about the brother-sister relationship since we have one in this movie. But Xander Berkeley was the, who plays Willis, the policeman,
yeah.
Chief of police, right? Who's been on lots of things. I knew him most from 24. I guess he was on 24. But he seems to have some idea that the movie around him is like bad.
Right.
And I mean, like bad.
And just like bananas bad.
Like bananas bad. I mean, not bananas fun, just bananas bad. And so yeah. He's kind of just playing it low key straight through the whole thing. And I kind of appreciated that.
Yeah, I feel like he had committed, but I agree there was kind of a, he knows what this is. And so he wasn't meeting them in a wacky place, but yeah, he also right. wasn't, you know, sometimes I feel like you can see people check their watch to be like, am
right.
I done here?
Right.
And so I agree. His performance was settled in this world.
He committed just enough.
Yes, like, I do
which is,
love
again,
it.
I appreciate that. Like, commit to the level of the thing that's going on here. And then, of course, there's Clint Howard, who shows up in these kinds of movies with some regularity. And you could, like, pluck him out of this and put him in the Grinch movie, like, pretty easily.
Yeah.
And it would be kind of the same thing. But, yeah, so the brother-sister relationship. What'd you make of this central brother-sister relationship?
Oh, God. I mean, I get why that actor was hired. Because he has the same lips that she does.
And the same hair.
And the same hair. Although his looks cleaner.
Yeah, yeah.
I did not get, after his first scene, his eye issue.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I thought, why is he still talking to that woman? She walked away. And I don't know if that was supposed to be that
right,
or if I don't even know. But I did enjoy watching him look through the glasses when they didn't do the full makeup.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Sure.
So I was distracted by continuity, as I often am. And yeah, it's not my favorite sibling relationship I've ever seen. What do you think, Toby?
No, I mean, obviously, look, this is like, there is nothing good here. Okay. No. Like there is nothing good, but I like that the person she seemed closest to in the movie was her brother.
Sure.
And for a movie that is built on a quote unquote sex symbol person, mm-hmm. and in one that sort of whose persona trades in that on and off screen, that is not central relationship, but that is a very, very strong relationship in the movie. I thought, okay, I applaud that choice. In a, mm-hmm. you know, better executed, better acted, it would be, you know, I would really clap, but I'm just silently in my head applauding.
Sure. That idea. Well, and I also just didn't like him.
Yes.
So I think that for me just made it like,
right.
I don't know. This was terrible. It reminded me of something. No. And now I'm going to need to look it up. This reminded me of a book only because of the trying to get to Canada.
Uh-huh.
And so I kept thinking of the book and how I had painted a beautiful world. And not, I mean, it's dystopian, but a beautiful picture of this world in my mind. The uh-huh. book is called When She Woke. And it's about it's a dystopian future in which criminals have their skin dyed a color that fits their crime.
Oh, interesting.
So like yellow is lower level, orange, then red is murder.
Uh-huh.
And the main character, we start in, I don't know, prison, something with her when she woke after the procedure. Uh-huh. And because she had had an abortion, she is dyed red as a murderer.
Ah, wow.
And then it's all, what do you do after that? Because you're, you know, it's like Scarlet Letter, but you're self.
Right.
And so there's a trying to get to another place and trying to pass and kind of things that, again, not related to this movie, but I was just racking my brain to find something that I appreciated. And so, you know, I would encourage people to check out When She Woke because, you know, it was better than this movie.
I thought,
and I'm sure I said, because I read it a long time ago, that it's something that I feel like Tobin should make.
Mm.
I think he would make a good movie out of that book.
It does sound good. I would encourage people to go watch Casablanca. when you're done reading the book, check out Casablanca.
Yes, absolutely. And while we're talking, because I love a dystopian, what have you? What are if you wanted to see a trash can fire, but an enjoyable one? What kind of dystopian future movie would you recommend, Tobin?
Oh, geez. Okay. Trashy. Do you have one in mind?
Well, I mean, as you know, I had the Hunger Games fever for a pretty long time.
Oh, sure. We all.
Full disclosure, have not seen the final two.
I haven't seen the last one.
Okay. But I think the first one, if you wanted an interesting, what I liked about the book and the movie is I think it gave you enough to make it a three-dimensional world, but you could also go on imagination adventures for kind of the ins and outs of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also really enjoyed how then the second one, like, turned some of that on its ear a little bit of like what we were meant to understand from Katniss's point of view from mm-hmm. the first book. Then when mm-hmm. she learns more in the second book, we then have to reorient kind of how we feel about the whole thing.
Right. Right.
And so that I found pretty successful.
The one that comes to mind is not trashy, but the one that comes to mind right now, because I just showed it in class a few weeks ago, is Children of Men. Have you ever seen Children of Men?
It's one of my favorite movies, Tobin.
Oh,
it's on my top five.
Oh,
yes.
Really? Oh my God. Oh, that's great.
I effing love that movie. Why aren't people talking about it more?
Why aren't people talking about this movie? I don't know.
Julianne Moore is... I mean, I was almost her character for Halloween once.
Oh my God, I love it.
It's so good. And I don't want to spoil anything, but I also love how people are complex and interesting and have faults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In kind of all levels of that. Oh, yeah. I love that movie.
That's so great. So many students had not ever seen it. And so it was really cool to show them, you know, and it continues to feel more and more relevant. I mean, the refugees in cages, and I mean, it's, you know, sadly it's even more sort of relevant today. Okay. I've got one. I've got a kind of cheesy one.
Yes,
from,
please.
From the next year, from 1997, I would send people to Gattaca.
Ooh, you've had a soft spot for that for a while.
I have a soft spot for Gattaca. Yes. This is Jude Law, Ethan Hawke, Uma Thurman, forgetting somebody else I think is in it. I'm sure it's not great. But it made a real impression on me at the time in ways that I. So anyway, I would check that one out. You know, okay. So, back to this movie, well, only sort of, just to bounce off it again. So the actor who plays Axel, who's kind of her old flame, who is a resistance person.
Yes.
So that actor in the same year made The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, good.
Which is another truly, truly terrible movie, which I am trying to get our friends at Real Bad Pod to do. I'd love to talk about The Island of Dr. Moreau. But he then went on to a real career he's an actor, you know, he's a in-person actor as well. He's in Aquaman, but he's a voice actor too. And he was Chief Tui in Moana.
Really?
Yes. which is the part I'm always cast in whenever my kids are playing or singing Moana. I get cast as Chief Tui, who has like four lines, you know. But anyway.
Sure. Did you want a stronger role to be able to really exercise your chops? Is that, are you petitioning here for a...
Yes. When my kids finally listen to this someday, I wish I got to play somebody else. Oh boy.
Indeed.
Yeah. There's not even much fun in this movie. Like there's not no. even,
but I have another, post-apocalyptic movie
you. Oh yeah, please. Good.
Very trashy. Doesn't make sense, but I would watch it again and again. And that is 1990s Prayer of the Roller Boys.
I don't know this movie.
Natalie Donovan, hero to us all,
yes,
introduced me to this. And it's Corey Haim, which is my preferred Corey. And just the one sentence when I Google it is, an undercover teen, Corey Haim, of the dismal future joins a cult of roller skaters who push a drug called mist. And they do.
Ooh, wow.
But yeah, all it's just trench coats and roller skates. I guess it's worth the trailer. You just check out the trailer. I keep suggesting it for How Did This Get Made? I feel like this is this would be an ideal one for them. But also Real Bad could enjoy it, but it is a future where I would not survive because I am terrible at roller skating.
Yeah, I would be out too. Yeah. The year before Barbed Wire came out, Terry Gilliam's 12 Monkeys was released.
That is bizarre. Let's marinate with that for a minute.
Okay.
12 Monkeys.
Yes.
Brad Pitt's. Oh, he's pretty, but he can act. Moment.
Right.
I mean, I think other people knew that, but I think for a kind of consumer audience, sure. That was Willis.
That was a career thing. Yeah.
Is it Madeline Stowe?
It is. Very good.
Came out a year before this piece of trash?
Yes. Came out the year before this piece of trash.
That is weird to me. So strange.
And that's not a trashy movie. That's...
No.
I think that's a really great movie, but it is a post-apocalyptic movie, like, from this same era.
I'm a little bit lost for words with that.
Oh, God.
Go ahead.
Do you think the anti-Semitism in this movie was on purpose or by accident?
Yeah, see, this movie just makes you feel yucky.
It really does. It is really not a good movie.
No.
Like, actively bad. Yeah. Bad for you movie.
Yes, this movie is bad for you.
Don't watch this movie.
Don't watch this movie.
You know, what's funny is that it came up, you could buy it on like the Amazon digital service. Last week it came up for $4.99, which is almost the rental price. And usually when that happens, I will buy a thing just because it was $3.99 to rent and I never want to watch it again. And this time I was like, I'm going to see if it's on YouTube. Can I watch this for free on YouTube? And it wasn't. But I just rented it. And I'm so glad I did, because I would not want this on my conscience or my credit card or my kids scrolling through what we have on Amazon Instant coming across barbed wire.
Yeah. And with the, with the beautiful hair, I could see at least yes, one of your right. children wanting to watch it because of the hair and what right. looks like a, the top of a corset of a gown, but is really right. just a cat suit. I could right. see some accidental going to kindergarten saying they watch barbed wire.
Exactly. Oh my God.
Yeah. It has a weird, like it almost could have been, because there's this other like, okay, it's the future, but it looks like there's a bunch of Dick Tracy extras in it.
Yes, right.
And yeah. so then that made me think like, okay, they could have gone that way. And it could right. have been like, because it's based on a comic book.
It is.
It could have gone comic booky, like you said, it's, Sin City. But I'm thinking more campy, like Little Shop of Horrors.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Where clearly the stoops are facades and they're not actually buildings. And
right. Right.
They could have, I don't know. I guess I'm not even going to make an argument for it to be saved, because I don't think it should be, but it's just bad.
Yeah. If it was deliberately artificial, it's clear we're looking at sets and
yes.
over the top costumes exactly. So I found one more post-apocalyptic movie that I really want to watch with you again sometime. Rain of Fire shows up on the pop post-apocalyptic list.
Use it!
Yes, use it. Matthew McConaughey, Christian Bale. And I'm reading here Gerard Butler, who I wouldn't have known at the time. Dragons and
in the tunnels and the... yes. Oh, the community garden.
Which I wonder if is a, so bad it's fun movie.
Sure.
To rewatch, as opposed to this movie, which is so bad it's bad.
It would be worth a try. I think it was long at the time. But at the time, yeah. I was all in for Christian Bale, so I was soaking up every minute.
It's kind of the last time those two actors would do that kind of movie, I think. 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And they both go the more kind of awards route.
I was going to say Oscar this. Bait.
Yeah, yeah. So it's sort of a turning point, I would say, maybe.
Yeah, we should just have an all dragon movie festival.
Yes. It is only an hour and 41 minutes.
Okay. Well, maybe it just felt long at the time.
It's under two.
I think because it was like this movie. I'm bringing it back to this stupid movie.
Okay, good. Yeah.
It's so much in the dark that it just felt very long to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is
a
different. So Children of Men is still futuristic and post-apocalyptic, but it's not always night.
Right.
And so I think that adds literal color, but adds to the, tableau of the film.
Yep. Yep. Agreed.
Okay. I have nothing else.
No. The only thing else I have for this movie is this. I knew I downloaded that for a reason.
Oh my God. It is so bad.
So bad. Do you even have a game for this movie?
I mean, I do, because it's my job.
Yeah.
So here's what I did. I did not want a game about her clothes or her nipples or her hair. all things that I have pointed out in this podcast.
Yes.
So clearly, you know where my head was at with the whole thing, but I did, you know, this is a character that I wanted to like, and I wanted to root for, and I had a difficult time doing that. So then I thought, well, maybe it's that Barb doesn't belong in this world. Maybe Barb belongs somewhere else. So I have a couple of options for you based on other films we've done.
Love it.
I would like you to tell me in each of the pairings, which one, where does Barb belong? Where could Barb have been helpful, useful, or happier? Okay. Who knows, right? Just let me know. Sure. So we have five pair here of where does Barb belong.
Okay.
Number one, The Babadook or Revenge? Where does Barb belong?
In Revenge, for sure. She feels like they feel like related, those two.
Absolutely, I could see that for sure. I could also see her fighting the monster in The Babadook.
Right, but like reluctantly. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I think yes, if she were out in the desert with Revenge, it would have taken on a very Mad Max kind of looking aesthetic. And she could have helped out and then maybe, I don't know what would have happened, but yeah, I think she would belong there. At least she would be outside. It would be daytime.
I love the idea of her just riding a motorcycle into that movie and out of that movie.
Yes, like, exactly. I think that's great.
Yeah,
exactly. Just dropping off like a canteen of water or something.
right.
Or a hair tie, but oh, she doesn't have any.
That's what they can't get in the free city is hair ties.
No scrunchies.
No scrunchies.
That's not true. I saw one in the bar very clearly.
Man. Okay.
Okay. Next up, Zero Dark 30 or The Contender. Where does Barb belong?
Oh God. I guess I would put her in Zero Dark 30. When the helicopter goes down, she then has to they send her in as like the second wave.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. What about you?
Pictured her in one of the meetings where it's Jessica Chastain and a bunch of men.
Uh-huh.
Then it would just be the very corner Barb with like her feet up on the desk.
Yes.
Leaning back, maybe with glasses kind of, you know, in her mouth. Like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
What if we think of it in a different way?
What if she takes out Bin Laden by throwing her stiletto, like the guy at the beginning of this movie?
Yes, yeah. That would have been good too. Okay. So all the previous ones are sort of on their own. Let's think of it in a team context.
Okay.
Whip It or A League of Their Own, where does Barb belong?
Oh, God. Whip It. I'd put her in Whip It. Like, put her on my team in Whip It for sure. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's it's the stronger answer just because she shows a skill for that kind of ruthlessness.
And she comes with her own persona.
Absolutely. Yes, she does. I would love to see her in A League of Their Own, like fighting with Tom Hanks.
Oh my God, she would destroy him.
But I also think they wouldn't know quite what to do with her. So I think Whip It she would probably have more fun. And likely her skills would be used well.
Better used, yeah.
In the Whip It land. Okay. Going back to a little bit of kind of some lost souls, where does Barb belong, in Leggies or Waitress?
Oh my God. Okay. I would put her in Leggies, and she would maybe have her give like the get your shit together speech to her in Leggies. What about you?
That would be good. I just would love to see her as a really hostile waitress at the Pie Diner.
Oh, yes.
Like, don't call me babe in a Southern Pie Diner.
Yes. That's great. That would be
a bloodbath. And then finally, let's turn that whimsy dial up where does Barb belong? In Frozen or Hocus Pocus?
Oh God. I can't do it to Frozen. I have to put her in Hocus Pocus. And I will tell you that I would watch Hocus Pocus many times before I watch this movie again.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good point. That could have been the other game. What would you watch more?
What would you rather?
I would watch Aliens again before I would watch this.
Wow. Yes. Okay, there we go, folks. That really says it all right there.
Really, it really does. I agree. I don't want to do that to Frozen, but again, I would love to see the reindeer trying to figure out her cat suit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Or a conversation between Olaf and Barb.
Oh, now that's true. The buddy comedy spinoff, Barb and Olaf.
Olaf and
Adventure.
Barb.
Adventure. Yeah, Olaf and Barb. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. So that's as close to a game as I could get, folks.
That's a great game. That's a great game.
If listeners have strong feelings, hot takes on where Barb belongs in our catalog of programs, please tell us on Twitter at ContendersPod.
We it's not part of our thing here, but I imagine every time you were saying that, I was imagining Barb in Stranger Things. I don't know if you watch Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say yes. Justice for Barb. Mm-hmm.
So you could imagine this Barb being that Barb, just like see what
show would do. If we have fans who are good at that kind of thing, can we make a Justice for Barb video, but it's barbed wire instead?
Yes, please, please.
That would be fun.
Amazing.
All right, Tobe, we have come to the end here.
Thank God.
Thankfully, it's time to give your closing thoughts. Is this movie progressive or regressive? Is this movie a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? Tobin?
Oh, this does no one any good. Men, women, like nobody, but especially women. I'm going to say no. What about you?
Yes, I would agree. There are themes I would pluck from this to put in something that would be progressive. You know, she plays by her own rules. She's a business owner. She has command over her sexuality. There are absolutely things.
Yeah. True.
But the rest of the world of the movie doesn't allow for that kind of narrative to be the main one. And then you've got the weird naked lady torture that was completely unnecessary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Pretty early on. And then just all the ways that Pamela Anderson, though also powerful, is objectified throughout the movie. And I think there are moments where, yes, she is using that to her advantage, but there are other times where it is just the movie objectifying her. Mm-hmm. And so, unfortunately, as a whole, I'm going to have to say, no, this is regressive and terrible.
Yep, it's true.
It's true.
Okay, so to cleanse our palate from barbed wire, our next movie, we're going to watch the Netflix Jennifer Aniston movie Dumplin' on May 28th. It's when that episode comes out. Come back on May 28th, and in between now and then, check out Dumplin' on Netflix. Now, you've seen Dumplin', right?
I think that's a y'all come back now.
Oh, okay, right.
May 28th.
Damn it. Yeah, I like that better. This should have been your line. Yeah. Y'all come back now, May 28th, for some Dumplin'.
Yes, absolutely. Good, nice work. Yes, I have seen it as a Dolly Parton.
Oh, yeah.
Fan.
Yeah.
I did watch that.
I watched it again
for this program.
I'm excited. Aislinn.
Yes.
Tell us where people can find you and tell us about the most recent episode of your other show.
I would love to. Thank you. So folks can find me at SassyNerdMT on Twitter. And right now, it just dropped recently, the newest episode of my podcast, Why Aren't We All, with special guest host Tobin Addington.
Oh, shucks.
We flipped the script. And Tobin interviews me about one way I think we could make the world a better place. And my argument is if we all watched Bravo.
Yeah. It was a really fun conversation. And if you haven't got enough of the two of us talking on this show, you can check us out on Isles on a Show.
It was super fun. As I was editing it, I was like, oh, this is great. And then I got toward the end and I was like, oh, Iceland, stop talking about Bravo. But on the whole, I think it's entertaining. And it's only a half hour long. So.
I was going to say, it's a way to sell your show there.
I just want to give people permission. If they're done, they can go. You know, I don't take it personal. But please check it out. It was so much fun to do. And we're a darn delight. Tobin, other than on my other podcast, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington, and you can find us on Twitter at Contenders_pod or on Patreon at thecontenderspod.com. Special thanks to our members who have joined at the marquee level or above, Sean Flynn and Jeff Addington. Woo-hoo-hoo! Become a member today, connect with other listeners, and support our show.
We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can explore all the great shows at cageclub.me. And you can keep tabs on all the Cage Club happenings on Twitter at Cage Club Pod. As always, thank you so much for listening. And one more time, I am sorry. I'm Iceland Addington.
I am Tobin Addington. And we'll see you next time on The Contenders. Holy shit.
I have made such an error. And for that, I do apologize.
I'm going to pick something in the future. And we will compare, I suppose.